Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app.
Get tender USDA Choice boneless chuck roast or stew meat for $6.99 a pound. Then get 2-liter bottles of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $1.49 each, all with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Greetings, travelers!
Greetings, travelers!
Greetings, travelers!
Oh man, we're all here.
We're all here.
The gang is all here.
If the gang is all here, and it's we are in 2025 epicness,
yeah,
which is really kind of cool. Honestly,
we have a very scary new year.
Yes, yes, and it's kind of we'll see what this year has in store, because you know things, stuff, all that. Yeah, cool things.
The world.
But I am back from Antarctica.
Jeez.
Yes. So I actually want to take over this particular recording and talk about my epic adventures in Antarctica, since we are an eerie travels type show. So
sounds wonderful. I can chime in with some Antarctica legends and see if you encountered any of them. That's what I figured I would do. So
okay, you can totally do that. So
and I'm here,
and Bo is here being her beautiful self. So I do want to give a quick update, just traveler, so you know we are still working on the book. There's various little things that have tied it up, but it is coming out. So The Dark Side of the Spokies should be out here shortly, but it is mid progress, so we are doing that. The other thing is, I know that I was gone through a lot of this, so there wasn't a lot of comment, but did you guys comment on the whole drones thing? Because that's ridiculousness.
It was interesting. We made it. Yeah. I think we recorded a comment right before you left, because that was right at the start of it.
And then I joked about it, but then it didn't become, we didn't talk about it in depth.
I've gotten so many theories on it. It's from people who were like, oh, it's, they were looking for a suitcase nuke that had smuggled into the country and they didn't want to panic everybody. So they were gamma detectors. Then there was some that were, you know, they were different things. I was convinced, I'm still convinced it's a government contractor that they don't want us to know what they're testing. I do not think it's an alien power. I don't think it's a foreign power. I don't think this is another Chinese weather balloon thing. I think this was us testing something. And that's why we were like, don't shoot them down. Don't do this. Don't do that. Because I think it was just something we didn't want anybody to panic about, but we didn't think anybody'd notice.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, that makes sense. I've heard all kinds of theories. And part of this, by the way, this wonderful episode is going to include feedback from a certain very well-known astrophysicist about aliens.
Oh, yay.
So that is coming up as part of this. But just to give everybody sort of some backstory on this, because I know you guys know, but our wonderful travelers don't know. I have a very good friend, we're going to call her Ripley, who unfortunately was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer, which is cancer of your lymph system. And she made the decision before she starts treatment and goes down that nightmarish route that she wanted to take an epic trip together. So I had sent this to her many, many moons ago, and it was because she is a huge original Star Trek fan. So Yay. The original series, you know, William Shatner, all that, she's a huge fan. She's been to a lot of events. And so she, I had found this cruise called Space, the number 2C. So it's Space to Sea. And it's put on by a company called The Future of Space. And so what they were offering was a 10-day Antarctic cruise. But on this cruise had William Shatner, Neil deGrasse Tyson. It had Jacques Cousteau's granddaughter. It had Scott Kelly, the astronaut. Yeah. Jose Hernandez, the astronaut. Like, the guest list just went on. And it was a very intimate cruise with a total of 264 cabins. So you would be 10 days in the Antarctic, really up close and personal with these people. So she reached out to me and said, hey, because of all this, I really want to go. Will you go with me? And I was like, yes, I will go with you immediately. So needless to say, we left in mid-December. So I was gone almost 2 weeks, but we headed down to first Buenos Aires. You flew into Buenos Aires. Buenos Aires, Argentina is absolutely beautiful and wonderful and amazing food and has my favorite wine, which, by the way, is called Malbec. It is my favorite wine.
I would say that's got to be a Malbec.
Yeah, it's a Malbec. And I had, for the record, we were only in Argentina for, 4 days before we left for our trip. And I sampled over 16 different bottles of Malbec and found which one's my favorite. And
you didn't get a chance to go hunting for Ucamar? That's their Nessie.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. That's their bear creature. I'm sorry. That's their bear. I completely just blew it. Ucamar is their bear, giant bear, Bigfoot type thing.
Oh,
and what's the one? I'm gonna have to clackety clack for a second. They have I can't remember. Nahulito is their Nessie.
Yes, so I did not go for those.
You didn't see any bear men while you were like three bottles deep?
No, well, first of all, that sounded like a lot of judgment. Bo, and I phrase because I was on vacation and I was in the Malbec capital of the world. So I was obliged to be a part of that situation.
Your rule that you had to have had that many.
Yes.
You had
to.
Yeah, that's I think it's legally required.
Yes. So we did stay in a fairly fancy hotel. I have to get the name of it because otherwise But the hotel we stayed in has been around, I think, since the 1930s and basically is haunted. That's what I'm going to say.
Oh, very nice.
Absolutely haunted. The name of it is the Alavir Palace Hotel. We stayed on the 6th floor. I will just tell you, something walks through those rooms. Yes, absolutely. Something walks through the rooms. And I was like, well, this is fun, but the wine helped. So that had it had the most beautiful marble spiral staircase that went from the top of the hotel to the bottom because it was before there were elevators. Anyway, it was very fancy, but absolutely haunted.
There do often seem to be ghosts in the hotels where you stay, Erica, even if they're not supposed to be, because that Mothman... We also had that ghost in our room.
Yeah. Well,
why does this happen to you?
I am not going to lie that I'm aware of that fact. We all know that, just in case anybody keeps wondering why I don't willingly go to places that have that. It's because that is my life. Okay. So it wasn't too terrible, but just old places, they have different things. So one of the interesting things was the whole idea of this cruise. And by the way, we'll link it in the show notes because Space to Sea is going to another really fun place next. So we go down there and everybody is supposed to arrive one day before, but my friend wanted to arrive before that. But we drove around, we saw the Capitol, we saw all these places. One of the weirdest places I saw was a British fishing club that's on this deck. It's only for upper class British people.
Mm.
And if like, I was like, that is... Of all the things, it was really kind of just weird to see this in the middle of everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so driving around, saw a bunch of different places. Argentina was nice. There were there was a ghost tour. Mm-hmm. I possibly missed it due to Malbec. That might be- but
other spirits took yes. care of you.
Other spirits were taking care of me. But one thing that we did get to do as part of this is I actually got to go to the American Embassy in Ooh. Argentina and met the U.S. ambassador that was there. That was the first encounter during the trip with William Shatner, who almost ran me over. And I'm not even kidding because he was walking towards some couches I was standing near and he wasn't stopping. So had I not moved out of the way, I think he's just used to people moving out of his way.
That does sound very like par for the course with William Shatner. Well, he does have that also, reputation.
How old is he now?
93.
So he might not even seen you.
Yeah, I was saying my eyesight isn't good now and I'm half his age. So
yeah, no, I mean, I am firmly convinced at this point that he is kept alive with some sort of robotics or alien things because yeah. it's terrifying how agile Batman is. But I also met that night Jacques Cousteau's granddaughter. She was there. I didn't know who she was and I just started talking to her. And then I also met, she's a reporter, Anne Curry. Have you ever heard of her? Yeah. She's very well known for going to war zones and things like that. She is amazing. So I actually ended up meeting her husband and then her. So it was very neat.
It's going to be scheduled on this year's Erie Travels.
Yes. Oh, yes. They're all definitely coming out. I bet they actually would, honestly. But so it was really neat going to the embassy and seeing the embassy. And they're always these really big, fancy kind of buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was, it was beautiful. But it was also kind of weird because like, I feel like I am one of the few people that is not like a fancy pants person. So I was like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to do here. Like, so anyway, but let's get to going down to Antarctica. But anyway, so that was part of it. So Erie Travelers, if you get a chance to go to Buenos Aires, which is amazing, one, go see a tango. Two, absolutely go through some of the markets and stuff and go on an empanada trying tour.
Yum.
I couldn't do it. Mm. My friend Ripley was able to because I'm gluten-free and I couldn't eat the empanadas, but she was in heaven. And of course, they have amazing Argentinian beef. So we were having just the most delicious meals. And there are so many places to see. We saw the presidential house, the square where the freedom fighters to free Argentina from its control from, I think it's Spain. Like there's just so much history. It is such a beautiful city. And some of the buildings are just thoroughly amazing. And what is that a picture of, Mark?
That's Nahuelito. And apparently at the Capitol, they built a rideable one year in 1923. And he's made out of burlap. We'll make sure we put that in the notes.
Okay, that's terrifying. Anyway, beautiful city with amazing history. Keep in mind, their seasons are opposite of our seasons. So when I went down there to Buenos Aires, it was summertime.
Mm.
Then you fly down to this town that is at the very tip of Argentina, which is where you leave for... the Antarctica. So One of the things that you definitely learn when you go down there is, first of all, we were on a boat called the Seabourn. We'll link this in the notes. It's an amazing cruise ship, absolutely beautiful. But we get on the cruise ship, and the biggest thing is, after we get on the cruise ship, which is about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they did a captain's briefing, which was nice. We got to meet the captain, the crew, the expedition crew, which are all different people. And their expedition crew consisted of a lot of people that were trained at, like, the birds down there, the penguins down there, which are birds, but there was a penguin expert.
Nice.
There were submersibles, which we're going to cover. So you get on this boat, and then, of course, I'm sitting there, and who comes and sits directly in front of me in this, like, little ship auditorium, which holds about 300 people, but our lovely friend Neil deGrasse Tyson sits directly in front of me. And then William Shatner goes up and gives us the welcome speech, and to tell us that every day he's going to give us a captain's log.
Nice.
Cute.
Yes. Wow. And his thoughts on our day every day. Now, the humor of the Starfleet captain versus the ship's captain giving us a captain's log is very funny, I think.
Yeah.
But they introduced everybody and off we went. So when you go to Antarctica, fellow travelers, here's something you learn. There is a place called Drake's Passage.
Yes.
What is Drake's Passage? Do you either of you know?
It's a horrible area where the waves are super high and you don't see land for quite a while and people get seasick.
And it was, oh man, what was
Francis Drake something did
there were a lot of things that they didn't consider it one of the seven seas because that area was certain death. So
it is, and what I think people don't realize is it's certain death because the weather systems from both sides of South America collide there. So there's constantly warring weather systems hitting that area, whether it's high pressure versus low pressure, heat versus cold, it's just a mess. And so when you go through Drake's Passage, which is about a day and a half, 2 days travel to get to Antarctica, or to get to the tip of Antarctica, I should say, the waves on a calm day are between 9 to 12 meters.
Yeah.
On a calm day.
Yeah.
So you want to have seasick patches, by the way, which, in case you don't know this traveler's fun story, you have to get those as a prescription. But also, they cause amazing dry mouth. So just so everyone's aware of that fact. But
as long as you drink some Malbec, you're good.
It turns out no amount of alcoholic or non-alcoholic choices will make that dry mouth go away.
Yeah.
So
I think the highest recorded wave in there is in the 12-meter mark, which is 40 feet for us Americans.
No, that's not the highest, my friend.
Oh, okay.
I had 19 meter waves. Like,
wow.
So 9 to 12 is normal. Normal.
Yeah.
So yes. So, 9 to 12 feet is normal.
Yeah.
But yes, they get it gets bad. And it depends on the storms and everything. So sailing down, though, I shouldn't say sailing. Going down on the boat, there was no sails involved, everybody. Let me remove that.
You're still sailing, yeah.
No sailing.
Technically the term.
Yeah. But we headed down, which was really fun. It took us 2 days, and we arrived at Elephant Island.
Yay.
You know what Elephant Island is?
Is it elephant seals?
No. I had no idea, but I guess from a satellite picture, there's a lot of misnomers as to why it's called Elephant Island. Once somebody said the elephant seals, other people said because from a satellite picture, it looks like an elephant's trunk.
Trunk, yeah.
Yeah, all this. So it's one of those things where it depends on who you ask. It's called Elephant Island. But that was our first trip out on the Zodiacs to the glaciers.
Wow.
To drive around and see all the penguins. And that was my first encounter with a penguin coming up to the Zodiac, which is a boat we were on, and trying to jump in the boat, which I had to then find out what we were supposed to do, because we got told very specifically not to touch the wildlife under any circumstances. You're actually not allowed to take rocks, feathers. You can't take any souvenir from there, which was kind of, you know, my granddaughter loves to collect rocks. So I was hoping to take her a rock, but they're like, no, 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 don't touch anything.
Bring her one from Argentina. She'll never know.
Yeah. Don't lie to children. We do all the time. But what was interesting about these little penguins, which are called Gen 2 penguins, by the way, travelers look them up. They're super cute. So I had to ask the expedition person what we're supposed to do. Like if it jumps, because it was less than a foot from me. So I was like, if it manages to get in, am I getting it out? Are you getting it out? Who's getting it out? Like, how does this work? What do we do with the penguin in the Zodiac driving around? But it was below freezing, but we're driving past these huge ice pieces and these glaciers and all of this stuff. And you learn, like, you really see, you know, people talk about the glacier where the tip is just the beginning and then the rest. Like, you in these waters can see these huge ice things underneath the water. Like, you can see these huge glaciers.
Yeah.
And it is just amazing to witness this, like just sitting on these Zodiacs and driving around and seeing all these pieces. You see, they talk about how the ice fractures and you can tell whether or not how old something is by the way it fractures and stuff. So it's just beautiful, but it's really cold, everybody. And this is summertime.
Did you see any undersea creatures that live there? Like my favorite was, my brother described me was the ice fish, kind of see-through.
Yes, and I'm going to get to that point.
Oh, okay, sorry. That was one of my brother said was the coolest thing he ever saw. So
yes, well, I don't even know where to list the coolest thing, because the first day we just drove around on Zodiacs. They didn't let us get off the ship. And then when we went back to the ship and stuff like that, there's all these different talks, which I'm going to get into the second half, going over some of the talks, including a surprise. But then we drove to, then the next day we moved to another island, which is very well known as an island. One of, oh my gosh, and I'm going to forget his name right now, who was an adventurer whose boat got wrecked and he got stuck on Antarctica. But he was known because he was one of the few people, it starts with an S. What is his name? Stockton. Yes. Yeah. So we went to an island that has his statue on it.
Oh, nice.
Yes, because he went down as an exploration, and you guys should look up Stockton because it's a really amazing story. But one of the things that
Stockton's a different explorer. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, Shackleton. But he went down, and one of the things that was really interesting is that he ended up saving his entire crew.
Yep.
Like, he was known for that. Like, people weren't just wasted, because you go down there and you got to imagine these guys were going down in wooden ships and stuff, and then the ice gets together, moves, and like, his ship got crushed.
Yeah,
but he had the
Endurance was the name of his ship.
Yeah. And for literally months, these guys survived on these volcanic ice islands by killing seals and penguins. And like, it's an amazing story. So we heard that entire story by who? None other than astronaut Scott Kelly, who told us that entire story of him and his journey. And I have a picture of it, but it's there's a statue to him on this one island that also is full of penguins. So that was
very nice. There's because of the volcanoes down there, there's some very unique life forms that have adapted to live right on the rims of the volcanoes, because that's the only place that's got any heat at all down there. So.
No, and I was standing into the middle of the largest, most recently active volcano in Antarctica.
Is that Erebus or?
I don't remember the name off the top of my head. I know, terrible storytelling here, but
it's all right. I'm sorry. I'm trying. I'm nerding out because I fell in love with Antarctica because H.P. Lovecraft's At the Mountains of Madness. So I did all this research on Antarctica at one point. The minute you said statue, I was like, oh, Shackleton statue.
Yeah. No, and so this volcano, the last time it erupted was 1976. But it erupted and then sank in on itself and then erupted again. And so it's this whole bay that's been created, but it's a giant volcano thing with other little mini volcanoes around it. But they are actively keeping track of the tremors and stuff because it's still a very active volcano.
Now, Erebus is huge. That's the big dome mountain. So that's...
I don't think I went that far in. But... what was interesting when we made landfall is we're driving up on the Zodiac and there's a penguin right next to me. So I jokingly started kind of being called Snow White because everywhere I went were like these, calling him from the ocean and this penguin just jumped up on land right next to us.
You've been hanging around Carrie too much. That's
yes. Yeah. I took my inner Carrie down to Antarctica, but I walked on Antarctica and saw seals that are just laying on the ice. The thing about when you really get down there, first of all, there's no vegetation.
No.
None.
Is it like being on the moon?
It felt that way a little bit until I learned a little bit more about the moon, which we're going to discuss in the second half. But one of the things that was really interesting is it was so just barren. Like, You see it in movies and stuff, but until you're standing there and like looking at the rocks and looking at the ice and looking at the, you know, the snow and stuff, you're just like, wow, there is these creatures, these seals, these penguins. We saw humpback whales. I saw pods of orcas. Like seeing them there, you just go, they survive in this.
Yeah. Many of them don't like produce the same like hemoglobins and stuff we do so that they can survive in the cold. That's why they die in warmer water and warmer climates and stuff. So
yeah,
there's so many weird things. And the beauty, the difference between Antarctica and Arctic, a lot of people don't realize is you go to the North Pole, there's no land. It is all sheets of ice, just very thick ice. Uh-oh. And now the South Pole there's land under there. And some places it comes up because of volcanoes and stuff like that.
That's because
it's a continent. There is an Antarctic continent. And they have found like fossilized wood and other things down there from what used to be forests and stuff like that. But that was back prehistoric, you know, back when Pangaea and stuff like that was still going on.
No, it is thoroughly amazing in being there. And there's no words to describe seeing it, but it is, by the way, 24 hours of daylight. Mm. So that's a weirdness where you go out on deck at 1 o'clock in the morning and it's just like it's 11 o'clock in the morning. Oh. Like it's fine. It's not weird at all that that's happening. But I will say that going in the Zodiac and going and landing and going on these expeditions was thoroughly amazing. And one thing that we did was the submersible. So we went 100 meters in a small little, it was like a fishbowl, really, 400 meters down. And you see all this life that's underneath the water. And so there is a fish down there, for instance, that actually, it looks like it has it's like called a gator fish or something. It looks a gator mouth, but it literally has, I think it's battery acid is the blood or freon.
Ew.
Or
something.
Yeah.
Because
it's got like the golden bristles.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just very sharp tooth, very sharp tooth.
Yes. No. And it's got this because it survives underneath this ice type water. Mm. And there are starfish there that have like 50 little tentacles. And when you look at it through the submersible you're in, which is a little like submarine thing, it looks like it's about 4 or 5 inches in diameter, but because of how rounded that is, it's literally like 2 or 3 feet in diameter, really. And I saw Krill, which, by the way, is the entire life force of how that's what all these marine animals eat, the whales, the penguins.
They're like little shrimpy things, right?
They're not. They're like this big. They're like 4 or 6 inches.
That's why the colossal squid eat them by the pound, man.
They always appear small. They're always eaten by like a big humpback whale or something. So you're like, oh, it must be a tiny thing.
No. Well, think about how big a whale is. That's the thing. Yeah. It's tiny for a whale, not tiny for us.
Yeah, no, they're not tiny at all. So I saw that, and
any of the spiders that are down there? They have a special spider. Sometimes it's in the water. Usually they're about as big as like a dinner plate, and they're very leggy. They look more like giant crabs, but they're spiders.
No, I didn't see a spider. I saw a starfish, a regular starfish too. I saw these things that are like these sort of sea vases that are put together. They're white, but they literally take millions of years to create. Mm. And they're huge and they're all over the place. It was so neat seeing these creatures that are just down there and just the pictures, because it's nothing like you see in other areas.
Yeah, those see-through fish. Chris showed me, my brother showed me a picture of that, and it just freaked me out. I was like, what?
Yeah. Well, and it's just, we're so used to almost tropical ocean life that think of it. And there's no light down there. One of the things that was interesting that our sub driver did is, because it was Christmas Day when we went down, and he had a Santa hat on, and he showed us, like, it was bright red and white Santa hat. And when we went down, it turned black. The red part turned black because of the light difference. Mm-hmm. It looked like we were in the same lighting that we were up above, but it was so bizarre. So we saw that. So anyway, there were 6 of us that went down, and it was really, really fun. And we saw all those things again, 400 meters under the ocean surface in Antarctica. So it was weird. And of course, when we came up, what was swimming around? Our penguin friends.
Erica's here.
Yeah, Erica's here. Let's go play. So that was fun. You know, that was going and seeing, like I said, pods of humpback, pods of orcas, which, by the way, the white part of the orca, because of what it eats and being down there, turns yellow.
Nice.
In Antarctica. It was weird. It was very weird. But we saw all those things. So that alone, and just seeing these huge icebergs and stuff like that, were amazing. It did look like Lex Luthor could create many hideouts down there appropriately.
Nazis, and so did the aliens, apparently. So
yes. But
I'm sure you're going to tell us after the break.
Yeah, we need to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to hearing some of the stuff I learned.
Destiny Beard, the lyrical soprano who will haunt your dreams. With her alluring melodies and intricate harmonies, this dark siren of wistful song shall capture your soul and lead you into the night. Check out Destiny's new single, The Haunting Is Over, with international musicians Sam Haynes and Gary Bennett, as well as her other musical works at destinybeard.com.
89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. But with AI tools popping up everywhere, how do you separate the helpful from the hype? The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at 1/3 of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. With over 15 years of experience building responsible, secure AI, Grammarly isn't just another AI communication assistant. It's how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. Designed to fit the needs of business, Grammarly is backed by a user-first privacy policy and industry-leading security credentials. This means you won't have to worry about the safety of your company information. Grammarly also emphasizes responsible AI, so your company can avoid harmful bias. See why 70,000 teams and 30 million people trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise. That's grammarly.com/enterprise. Grammarly, enterprise-ready AI.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. So that was the actually going around and seeing all the stuff. And I haven't even covered everything. I was down there for 10 days. It was amazing. So I will say one other thing I did outside before I talk about the other things were I did the polar plunge.
Wow.
So I jumped off a Zodiac into water that was actually, I think, 7 degrees below freezing.
Oh.
You get a certificate for this because Antarctica and the Arctic are actually the only two places you can legitimately do a polar plunge.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else who says polar plunge, it's not a real polar plunge.
Jumping into ice water, that's not the same thing.
Nope, not at all. And part of the difference is when you get out, it's freezing outside. So the water's cold. It's cold outside. Terrifying. The good thing about the ship is they gave you lots of shots of whatever you wanted to drink. And I did my polar plunge right after my friend Neil deGrasse Tyson, his wife, and his kid, after he explained to me for over 30 minutes why he changed his mind and decided to do it. Because initially he wasn't going to.
No, because he's like, this is stupid. But
yeah, I don't know that he thought it was stupid. I think it's just, I mean, it is cold. So we actually broke
some stress on the body.
Yeah. We broke the record on the ship for the most people on the ship to do the polar plunge, which was 148 of us went in.
That's a bunch of nerds. We love it. So
yes, it was a bunch of nerds. It was a lot. I went at the end of when they were doing it because they did it by color groups. Like we were all divided by color groups. And I will say that the storm had started to roll in for the night. The wind was gusting. And when I jumped into the water, they tie you to a harness so you can't float away, by the way. Just
so you don't freeze up and just drown.
Yeah.
And when I jumped in the water, it took me 3 tries to get out on the ladder. So I just want mad points, by the way, travelers. If you're down there, do the polar plunge.
Rock on.
Totally worth it.
If there were, if it was haunted, you wouldn't have done it. But,
but she's okay being cold.
-7, no problem. As long as I got some Malbec.
Yeah, no. I was doing whiskey shots to get into and out of the water. Malbec's not going to do shit for you then. So,
did they at least have like warm bathrobes for you after?
Big fluffy towel. Or did you have to do the roll in the snow first?
Or did you have to walk of shame back to your room freezing?
No, you brought your, I brought my bathrobe down and all that. The thing is the ship is so warm in comparison. Like it's, you don't need a warm bathrobe. You just literally need to walk back into the ship because it's
tropical temperatures inside. Yeah.
Yes. In comparison to negative freezing water. So it was interesting. And, you know, I had a couple shots and then I did my walk of shame back to my room. And then I, you know, went and did other fun things for the evening. But here are some interesting facts that I didn't know. When Scott Kelly and the other astronauts were talking, one of the things they talked a lot about the moon landings. And there was another astronaut who was on there who was one of the people that went up near the, I think it was Apollo 16 he was on. I'm trying to look up his name. I'm doing a clackety clack so that I can. Charlie Duke.
Oh, so wow.
Charlie Duke was there. And
so, OG.
Yes, he is one of the OG people that did the moon landing. And so one of the things that was very interesting was they talked a lot about, and I hadn't heard this before, right? But a lot of the Apollo missions we didn't realize were to do things like first get to the moon and then like go around the moon and then land on the moon and then land and get out and do a spacewalk on the moon. Like there was a lot of stuff. But one of the things that Charlie Duke said is they started training them for 6 years total in doing geology. So they could understand what to collect when they landed on the moon from a rock standpoint. So just
bringing back more dust. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was one of the things they talked about was they didn't realize until they landed on the moon how dusty the moon is. Not sandy, dusty. Like thick layers of dust on the moon. And when they went to land some of the places, one of the things is they almost had to pull the Buzz Aldrin mission and stuff like that. Charlie Duke was the comm person for that mission when it landed.
Yeah.
And you can hear him talking about like holding the breath and stuff like that. And the reason they were doing that was because they didn't think they had enough fuel to land. They were very worried that they had to pull the mission because where they were going to land initially ended up being not a good place for them to land. So they had to move, but they had very limited fuel being in space. So it was just fascinating listening to the astronauts talk about some of the different aspects and like being on the space station. Scott Kelly was one of the astronauts who had been in space for over a year at one point.
He was one of the longest ever.
Yes.
That record's been broken a lot now, but now Charlie Duke, the big thing about him, he was the youngest man ever to go to the moon.
Yep.
How old was he when he went to the moon?
It was like in his 30s. I'd say he's like 30, 35, 36.
So he was 29?
When he started the program, but I think it was like 36 when he went.
No, he was much younger when he started the program.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I forget how old he was exactly. But yeah, he was the youngest person for, you know.
And I think he was 36. I'll have to Google that.
Yeah. And one of the things, though, too, with talking to these astronauts about all of their, you know, doing things and stuff, and like Jose Hernandez, he actually applied to be an astronaut 12 times before he was accepted.
Yep.
He was a immigrant. His parents were migrant workers. Like it was an amazing story of how he became an astronaut. But one of the things that, you know, Scott Kelly talked about, which I never heard, was his heart shrank 30% while he was in space.
Wow.
It grew back, but it had shrunk 30%. And then what was interesting, because Scott Kelly has an identical twin that was also an astronaut who's now a congressman, right? But his DNA changed being in space.
Weird.
Yes. It's different than his brother's DNA now, even though they're identical twins.
The scientists must have been so psyched when they found out that he had an identical twin. That
they were to do
and contrast studies on.
They were. Well, what was interesting is he said his brother actually had to be employed by NASA to do all these tests. So like they were constantly doing, you know, different pee tests, blood tests, whatever. And so he was the lowest paid employee ever at NASA because they had to pay him, but he was being paid minimum wage because all he was doing is giving different
like blood draws.
It wasn't like a full-time job, right? But he was being paid minimum wage to do all this testing while his brother was in space. It's kind of just amazing stuff. But there's more to that to learn. But I keep saying, but I think one of the things travelers should take away is I think there's layers to space travel that we don't see in movies unless you go down the rabbit hole, you don't learn.
Right.
I felt totally educated. And here's one other thing. So I met a gentleman named Tom, who was the first employee at SpaceX. He was the designer of the engines for the rockets and stuff for SpaceX. Worked with Elon Musk. Amazing visionary guy. But the reason he got the job with Elon was because Elon was looking for somebody who felt they could actually build these engines. And everyone else he had talked to said, I don't know if it can be done in that time. And Tom was like, yeah, I think it can. And was able to put together his team of people to do it. And their entire job was to make it light, these engines lighter and cheaper. So their whole thing was, how do we do this so this can like actually grow? So he was allowed to try all these different things to make that happen. And it's just fascinating how they went about not being in confined things on building this and being able to test all these things to do these rockets, which they did do. And now he owns a company that he created that's job is space transport. What does that mean? He doesn't take off from Earth to do it. He literally has a transport system from lower Earth orbit to the moon, to the space station. He's basically a trucking company transport in space. So he's getting they're building a whole space station for this transport kind of thing, because it's a whole different thing getting into orbit and then getting stuff around, and the amount of fuel it takes when you're trying to go from Earth all the way through, it's just not worth it. So basically he's creating this amazing company to do space transport.
Space Amazon.
Yeah, basically it's Amazon in space. He's not doing it with Musk. It's his own company. But I thought, I had no idea anything like that was like,
My previous job, I was doing security support, IT security support. And one of the companies was a rival company of that. And they were talking about that was their chief rival. And I was like, oh my God, there's so many little pop-up companies all over Florida, all over Texas. They're all trying to get on that bandwagon. They need Musk to get them up there. But then once they're up there, they're going to do their own thing. So,
yeah, no, it's really interesting. But here's something, I don't know if you know this. Do you know how much space junk is orbiting Earth? Oh, yeah.
Tons.
I'm assuming it's a lot, because there's a lot of junk here on Earth. So I'm assuming we also put stuff up there.
Clack this, Bo. I'm not even kidding. Space junk in Earth orbit. I mean, orbit around Earth.
I mean, how much of it is coming down? I mean, we just had another piece hit Kenya last week. And then we had one hit North Carolina not too long ago. That they were all, oh, it's SpaceX, it's SpaceX. No, it turned out to be a Chinese rocket. But
China's an estimated 130 million pieces of space debris.
Yep.
So what's interesting is something has to be done about this before any idea of even orbital travel is really real, because you can run into so much stuff up there. Just run into it. And it's not little stuff. Some of it's little, but a lot of it is huge chunks of satellite and other rockets and other stuff that's just floating around.
Yeah, the thing I just read said that like 35,000 pieces are trackable. The rest of the pieces are too small to be trackable. So who knows what you're going to run into, because you can't track it for your
some route. Of the theories on the famous Black Knight satellite, which is this thing that's been up there since the early missions. People were taking pictures of it. It looked like this strange alien device. And we think it was just like a heat shield, like a tarp that's up there in space, just kind of floating around. And somebody was actually saying that it is a tarp, and it's actually stopped some of that debris, kind of like a garbage bag catching.
So what you're saying is we need a big net.
There are companies trying to do that.
They have to, because there's no way to safely do that. Because imagine just debris all over a road. That's what you'd encounter trying to do some of this stuff that they're trying to do.
That's been the plot of a bunch of movies, too, about like space missions and then getting hit by debris. And then I don't remember what the movie is. Gravity.
Yeah.
Apparently that's was stated is the best representation. If you want to understand what the state space debris is like, watch the movie Gravity with Sandra Bullock.
Yep.
So I don't want to run out of time, but that was all fascinating. So I think you should look at it. But I was so excited to find out that we got to have dinner with a celebrity. Mm. Everybody who was on this cruise got to have dinner one night with a celebrity. And who did I get to sit right next to have dinner is none other than Mr. Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, so jealous.
It was so amazing. First of all, he is just one of the nicest human beings you will ever meet. He is an educator above anything else. He wants people to understand. Of course, he's ridiculously smart. I will say I ended up being able to play trivia with him and his wife and astronauts and stuff. But the team for the 3 days we played came in second all 3 days. So having an astrophysicist and astronauts on your team does not guarantee a win, people.
No, just especially if there's a sports category.
Luckily, there was not. So it was fun. The third day, I named the team, "We Don't Want to Be Second Again." That was the name of the team. Second again. But it was incredibly fun. But when I met him for dinner, you know, he got asked a bunch of questions. There were 10 of us total at the dinner table with him. So it was a lot of fun. But I did ask him about aliens because, of course, we're Eerie Travels. He had a very interesting view. I'm not saying I agree with his view. I'm just going to tell you what his view was, right? So this is an astrophysicist. His view, and I didn't get to ask a follow-up question, which I wanted to ask, which I'll explain in a minute. But his thought was this, two things. One is he thinks aliens would be too big of a secret to keep under wraps, that if they were really there, it would be way too hard to keep it secret. The government would not do a good job. Now, my follow-up question was going to be around the fact that if aliens make contact when we think they did in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and did get introduced to our governmental bodies, it's very easy, if we're not talking about 20 different alien races, but just one or two, that they understood the dynamics and the secrecy. And that's what I didn't get to ask him. What if something like that happened? But he knows alien life is out there. Carbon is the number one resource in the galaxy. He believes that any other life forms out there are carbon-based life forms. It's just one of the core things that makes up. So it's not silicone-based life forms or whatever. They're carbon-based life forms. So his theory is that it's too big of a secret to have been kept. So if they were there, we would know. However, one of the things he said, and we can all decide how we feel about this. So the other part he thought of was this. Chimpanzees are only 1%, 1% different than us humans. I don't know if people know that. 1% difference.
Two chromosomes? They have 46, we have 48?
I think yeah, something like that. 1% difference. Now, chimpanzees, the highest level of what we would consider knowledge base is toddler level with chimpanzees. They can do toddler level things. And we, as humans, I'm not saying we consider them dumb, but we don't consider them very intelligent and would not think they were capable of many, many things. So his thought was, if aliens are out there and they're 1 or 2% different from us, right? Would we be the equivalent of chimpanzees to them on an intellect scale?
Right.
Maybe.
And would we just not be worth the time because we're effectively just more nicely dressed apes?
Well, maybe, you know how like chimpanzees are really dangerous to keep as pets. I think humans would be even more dangerous to keep as pets, so they don't want to hang out with us because we might bite their faces.
So it was interesting because, of course, our galaxy is expanding and doing all that. But his whole theory was aliens probably look at us like we do chimpanzees. Yeah. So,
Mark
shared a picture from Planet of the Apes, but
I took you from Escape from the Planet of the Apes, which was one of my favorites, where they go back in time and they come to our time and we start doing studies on them, and they do the classic, make them do the puzzles and everything, and Dr. Zira sets up the thing and sets the statue. They're like, why would she eat the banana? She's like, because I loathe bananas. Like, oh, she talks. Well, I was like, yep. And I remember that in the original Planet of the Apes, Charlton Heston's got his throat cut so he can't talk. And he's trying to tell them things. He's trying to write in the sand. And You're like, what's he doing? What's he doing? He's like, oh, you know, human see, human do. great movies.
It's OG play Ape. It's kind of interesting if you think about it a little bit like that. If we don't think that they believe they're on the same level with us and that they're superior to us.
That's, hey, you know, look at us with those penguins. Yeah. Penguin may have been studying you and you didn't know.
Yeah, no, that penguin was following me. I might have put him in my suitcase to bring him back. But the other thing that I thought was really, so that was fascinating and kind of talking about that. And he talked a lot about the universe expanding because the universe is continuing to expand and expand. They're sort of measuring it. It was very funny because there were two different like panel things with William Shatner and Neil deGrasse Tyson. I don't know how much William Shatner believes in actual science.
Hey, he owes William Shatner's Unexplained.
Yes.
With our good friend John Stamey and Dave Spinks have both been on.
So. Yes. Well, I think William Shatner's amazing. This is not against him, but he would fight with, because one thing that is actually not arguable is physics.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now, there's dark matter. There's all this stuff which you can go.
We keep learning more about physics that makes things. That's why it's an expanding science. It is.
But physics are physics. And physics work. And we've seen them work. So
you cannot change the laws of physics.
Yeah. What is hysterical is that William Shatner would say something like, yeah, we can't prove that. And Neil deGrasse Tyson would go, well, actually, physics tells us A, B, and C. And then Shatner would go, so it's not provable. And I was,
did they just argue for 10 days? Like,
pretty much, but Neil deGrasse Tyson was so nice about how he handled it. But the whole time, he was like, but this. And then meeting Ann Curry. Ann Curry, by the way, is probably one of the nicest humans I've ever met. She is so sweet and just so caring about those around her, but very amazing to see someone with her experience who's been in the war zone she's been in and all this. She was so genuine and not like standoffish. You would think some of those experiences would make you more hardened or whatever. That wasn't the case with her. And then I did get to interact with William Shatner a couple times. One of them was over lunch when I was talking to his girlfriend about kayaking. And then every topic I brought up, he would say, yeah, well, that's because you could die. I'm like, Mr. Shatner, like, it's gotten very morbid. Like, everything I've talked about, you're like, but you could die. And he's like, yeah, you could probably die from what you're eating on your plate, too. And I'm what is going on?
You got a Blue Origin rocket in your 90s. You could have died too.
It was so funny. But then sitting with him in another event, he's like, yeah, nope, that could kill you too. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, everything could kill me or whatever. It was
his contending with his mortality that week.
Career. That's all you got to do is bring up his singing career.
Oh, no, he brought up his singing career. Oh, yeah, new album he's recording with Brad Paisley.
Oh, well, I liked his last one. Has Been was amazing. If you haven't actually heard that, that's probably one of the best albums. It's probably one of the most overproduced albums of all time, but it's so good.
Well, he's got another one coming out shortly.
Oh, I'm in. His Rocket Man is still classic, but
yeah, he read us one of the song lyrics, the songs from it, and it was about a whale. And so it was just funny to watch them fight, and it wasn't like true fighting, but you could tell, you know, you have these people with different opinions, and the whole time you have somebody who's trying to do education and stuff like that. And it was very cool. But one of the last things I want to share, besides the entire crew of the Seabourn, was thoroughly amazing. I met so many amazing people. I want to say Chila, shout out to you. I don't know if you're listening, but she was amazing. She's from Turkey. So I just met some very, very cool people that were, anyway, it was thrilling to meet them, but, The last thing I want to talk about is I was very fortunate to meet two people who had been prisoners of war in the war between Russia and the Ukraine.
Oh,
there were two females. One of them was a soldier who has written a book about her experiences. And the other one was, she was also a soldier, but she had started doing public relations. And so she spoke many different languages. They were both two of the most amazing people I'd ever met. The one who had written the book lost her husband during the war and was a prisoner in a Russian camp for months and months and months being tortured, which is, by the way, what the Russians do when they take Ukrainians captured. The war is still very much going on, if people haven't seen it. Two of the bravest people, but what was really fascinating was meeting, and her name is Valeria, meeting her, and she didn't speak any English, so her friend was doing a lot of translating. We ended up having dinner together, and I started seeing her sense of humor, and she has an Erica sense of humor, by the way.
Hey.
And so instead of letting her friend translate, I started using Google Translate, and so did she, and we had the best time for the next few days, just talking with each other and her sharing her experience. And she was one of, they were both two of the most positive people I've ever met, but their entire, they were invited by Scott Kelly to this, but their entire thing is to raise awareness of the war because the Ukraine still needs support. So there are many ways to support if you want to, but they're still fighting from their land that's been invaded. So that was one of the most awe-inspiring parts of the trip, was meeting two people that had gone through what they went through, survived. So travelers, I would say this is, I'm sure Mark can add a couple really fun anecdotes onto the end of this, but this was a once-in-a-lifetime trip for me. Traveling everywhere else, I just can't even describe what it was like seeing everything and meeting everybody and being a part of something this huge. The space to see and future of space, the next place they're going is the Galapagos Islands in November.
Oh, wow.
We'll have links to things. So if you're interested in going and being a part, and they are going to have some of the people that were on the cruise with me are going to be on that one and some new ones, but you'll never have an experience like it, traveler. So if you ever get the opportunity, I heavily, heavily suggest taking that opportunity and going and seeing these places, because it will be unlike anything you've ever seen before. So, Mark, what weird stuff didn't I mention?
Oh, no, no, we're over time, but we'll have to do an episode on Antarctic strangeness. I mean, they've got some unusual fungi. Of course, there's rumors of aliens and a lost city there. Some people say that's where Atlantis is, on the, you know, the mountains underneath. There are mountains of Antarctica, but they are buried under the ice. They can only ground penetrating radar them. So it's not the mountains of madness, like H.P. Lovecraft says. But there are, you know, fossils of rainforests that were there once. There are some strange, unusual creatures. My favorite is the blood falls there that are actual. It was a salty lake that's, you know, basically cut off from the atmosphere by the glacier. And the water is preserved, what, about 400 meters down? And it's become even saltier. So it's three times saltier than the seawater, so it can't freeze. So it, and since it's rich in iron and devoid of oxygen and sunlight, it comes through a fissure in the glacier, and it looks dark red. So it looks like blood red falls coming over the glacier. There's underground lakes there that have all kinds of crazy stuff. But anyway, that's, if you can do an inland excursion, but those have to be approved by scientific teams and stuff like that. Antarctica is the only country in the world that has a universal neutral ground. And it's the only country, no one's ever violated that treaty. So that tells you something, how important it is for study and science and all that. The reason you don't take rocks from there is it's probably the richest meteorite place on the planet, not because of it gets more than anywhere else. It's just, it's easier to find them because it's snow And then the rocks just stick to the top and there's no new ground except for around the volcanoes. So it's, if you see a dark rock out on there, it's probably a meteorite. And there's no humidity to ruin it. But anyway, that's, Antarctica is amazing. We'll have to get into that at some point. So
no, just that's true. And I
get the mountains of madness and then take your cruise.
And to my lovely friend Neil deGrasse Tyson, I'm going to do our exit mark for the
first time. Please do. Please do.
And here we go, travelers. So first of all, thank you all. We're excited for 2025. We have so many cool things coming up. So just pay attention to our socials, the website. Thank you, our patrons out there. You got some cool stuff at the end of this year. So, and there's more to come. But as a takeaway, I would say this, travelers, and this is specifically for one traveler, Neil deGrasse Tyson, you still owe me an entire explanation for ruining my sixth grade book report on the planet of Pluto since you were a part of it being removed. And you did not come to me, as we discussed, to explain yourself. So I still want that to occur. So you have an open invitation to come to Erie Travels to make up for my sixth grade book report. And with that, don't take penguins home. Stay safe out there. And yes, every hotel I go to is haunted. And we will see you on the other side.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.